I am radio. Do you hear me, America? Do you hear me? I am radio, the voice, conception of wood, steel, loops, mics, electric waves, tubes, and flesh and blood. In the golden morning, through to the folding evening, I speak to you with many music, sounds, and voices. You know me in what I have said. I am sent and received by electric waves, carried to you through the courtesy of natural laws. Mover along the wind, companion of sun and thunder, over the American continent, I sound from the steaming savannas of the South up to white Alaska, from the gold-tossing cornfields of the West to the incredible eastern cities. I speak with many music, sounds, and voices. Do you hear me, America?
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is John S. Young speaking. The World's Fair of 1940 in New York and the Golden Gate Exposition in San Francisco pay homage to the American system of broadcasting. Broadcasting in the American way reflects so vividly the fruition of mankind's struggle for freedom of speech. Magna Carta, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, these tremendous human documents have found their ultimate and sweeping expression in radio's powerful voice. Radio has made freedom articulate. The microphone is the symbol of our national forum where any man and woman with a worthwhile message can be heard. The liberties of the people are safe as long as there are tongues to speak and ears to hear. You will also hear brief messages from leaders in many walks of life who will express their opinions freely on the subject of the freedom of radio. This tribute to the freedom of radio in America is presented on the eve of the annual convention of the National Association of Broadcasters, which opens tomorrow in San Francisco. Radio broadcasting has become clarion voice, symphonic mature, devoted to the service of America, devoted to the service of our people. Listeners of America, this is radio.
What am I? Where did I come from? What were my beginnings?
New empire, born between hallowed and skyscrapers, bewildered by its own strength, confused and yet clear, speaking to and spoken by the people, where to and where from radio, we are listening.
In this National Broadcasting Company, 195 stations. Columbia, 141 stations. Mutual, 125 stations. Other independents all over the country make up the rest. The radio becomes more and more integrally a part of modern life in science, industry, entertainment, education, and communication.
You hear me, America? In which way do you hear me? Which way? In my whispering or my shouting way? My sentimental or my obstreperous way? My learned, my frivolous, or my news way?
Yeah. It's lonesome out here these long days on the prairie. What I'd do without the radio, I just don't know. When I'm feeling lonesome sometimes, and life's a trial, I just twist the dial, and really seems to me like I got company.
I tune in on the commentator. Hear what's happening. Like to know what's going on, people's views, and the news behind the news. Also have a favorite band. And there's one gal I like to hear sing. Kind of my dream gal. Though she's down in Florida and I'm stuck in Chicago, I think she's in the room when she's on my radio.
Got a little daughter, the name of Nancy, smart as a whip and acts real fancy. Talks about kicks and wears new hairways. She studies French lessons over the airways. She reels off French just like an heiress, but learned her parlez-vous in Paris. And to think she's never set foot outside of Big Rock, Arkansas. I am poor. Can't afford to take enough money from my salary to buy me a ticket to the symphony. Not even up in the gallery. But nightly on my little set, portable, a Christmas present, I can get Mozart's shining melody. The heady, cool perfume of Debussy melts away the walls that confine me in my narrow, lightless room. Beethoven uplifts me like a trumpet call to a universe where time stands still. All that from a little wooden box. I can't understand it.
I am an immigrant from a land where nobody must read, but I hear on air what I understand. I learn how to talk, what book I read. I feel one among many in the crowd. It makes me proud.
I'm going to learn how to fly. Always wanted to. Now I just heard in a broadcast about how I can get lessons at last.
You like this dress? It's my first evening dress. It's me, after all these years, getting gay, wearing something décolleté. Yes, I just got tired of being a country slattern and rode into the station for a passing.
Radio has lived with us every day. For us, the listeners, the Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Public.
Men have thought and written their thoughts. Their truth might be known to us in the loneliness of the night.
To our firesides come the statesmen who speak to us, movers and shakers of the earth, the holy men, the clowns and minstrels, the sweet singers, the interpreters and the teachers,
the bearers of the news of the swift passing hours.
They are there at our fingers' ends. To be heard or not, according to our choice. For they are at liberty to be heard, and we are free to listen or not to listen, to accept or reject.
Do you hear me, America? Do you hear? I tell you, America, that there are no more boundaries, no more lines to set you apart and divide you. The people are no mystery to each other. Through me, the lumberjack in the western forest dances to a fiddler's breakdown played by a Carolina Tar Heel. In Harlem, Rogers head in time with a jazz band from Palm Beach's Dunhop Strand. The main fisherman sits, his gray head bent, tuned to a cowboy's dying lament. Oh, I tell you, America, it's true. There will be no more dividing for you. United States are truly united.
You are no strangers to each other.
That's a fact.
Darned if they
check, brother. You hear me, America? I tell you, there are no more walls of hate or ignorance to stand between you. I have brought you together. When you hear me, you hear each other. I am your radio. Through me, you shake hands with the same people. You know the same crowd. Listen to a few of the friends you have in common. California, are you there?
On the air. Strange are the tales he sometimes tells, but the whole world tunes in Orson Welles.
The oldest kind of show business is what we call the living theater. We all still love it, and I guess we always will. We're learning now to love another great theater art, the motion picture. I know, because right now I'm speaking to you between takes on an RKO movie set in Hollywood. And since we're on the subject of radio, which is today's subject and the only important subject today, I'd like to say that that's the wonderful thing about radio, that you can take it anywhere and send it anywhere. And I'm very privileged and very glad today for the chance to say that radio is, in my opinion, the last great frontier in America. I'm very privileged to be able to serve it. I'd like to continue in any capacity whatsoever, even as a rather lost ad libber on a movie set, to thank it and to serve it in any way as long as it'll have me, and to remain as always obediently yours.
I have to admit it, I got a crush on Morton Downey, the Irish thrush.
When Irish eyes are smiling, all the world seems bright and gay. And when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they'd steal your heart.
God bless you.
Hollywood News, this girl's a topper. Your correspondent, Hedda Hopper.
Saying good afternoon to some of you, good evening to more of you, and good luck to all of you.
And here's Gene Autry. He's a lad who'll top them all in song and saddle.
Thank you, and greetings to the NAD. I hope you'll be listening each Sunday. When I'll be back in the saddle again. Out where a friend is a friend.
And for musical knowledge, there's no one wiser than your old professor, I mean Kate Kaiser.
Evening, folks. Hi, y'all. Because of radio, I'm able to say the best of everything to the students everywhere. And so long, everybody.
For me, a merry mood eternal springs from Stupenagel, the doughty colonel.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the Audio Radiance. When I resume my radio program in the fall, sometime roughly between September 28th and 30th, my byword will be, as usual, people have more fun than anybody, unquote. If I might paraphrase it on this occasion, I will add that the American people have more fun than anybody. For where on the face of the globe may a listener have the privilege of tuning out more excellent programs and stuff than here in America? I know a guy who hates programs but loves radio. He says he heard a Japanese broadcast once and he couldn't understand a word of it because it was all done in some foreign language. Then he listened to a tobacco auctioneer in America. Period. Now he tunes in nothing but studio applause, station breaks, static, and the guy who says, "This is the..." The rest of the time, I just sit in my cell and go...
My dial will always turn the way of Ollie Palmer, Virginia Ray.
Oh,
I certainly enjoy listening when Ted Using talks of sport.
Good evening, everyone, everywhere. 16 years of exciting radio memories are crowded in my words tonight as I speak from deserted Saratoga Racetrack. But no memory is stronger than that which sums up my feelings, in that I thank the radio listeners who have helped me through the years to make my broadcast very pleasant listening, and that I thank the industry as a whole for giving me the chance to add something to its progress. Right at this moment, I have the same emotion inside me which marked my first broadcast those long 16 years ago. Good night.
Gee whiz, the guy I'll bet on is Craig Earle, the old Professor Quiz.
Thank you very much for those kind words, Vlad, but don't go away. Come here, I'll ask you a question. You know this freedom of the press that we're talking about tonight? You know that in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, don't you?
Yes.
Now, did that Bill of Rights guarantee us our freedom of speech?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, but it didn't. We already had it.
Oh.
It simply guaranteed that the government couldn't take it away from us, and that's something for us all to remember. We have this inestimable privilege. It's ours, and only we ourselves can throw it away. Thank you.
James Nelson fills my heart with gusto, singing Allegretto, Rubato, or Robusto.
As I hear her family rise.
You, Mrs. Blue.
That was Molly. But here is Gertrude Berg, actress, author, and director of the Goldbergs. Mrs. Berg.
Good evening. I don't very often have the occasion to appear before the microphone as myself, although I suppose Molly is as much myself as any invented character can be. But the truth is that I have used Molly to represent what I thought is most valuable and stable in our democratic life. For her, as for myself, freedom of speech hasn't been so much the right to object to what I don't like as the right to defend what I do. There would be very little creative activity in the world without this profound privilege of free speech. For us, freedom of radio is another weapon in the arsenal of liberty. We should never relinquish it. And as Molly would say, Rosalie, my kin, a bird three in the air is worth two in the cage. Thank you.
Now, I'm a fan for amateur shows. You can always give me Major Bose.
All right, all right. Around she goes, and where she stops, nobody knows. Thank you.
Dorothy Gordon of Talents Untold, idol of children, young and old.
Hello, everybody, young and old. In Europe, I saw radio being used to carry falsehood and fear into the hearts of boys and girls. Over here, it brings to our children the message of fun and play and freedom. I'm sure that if all the children of America could speak with one voice into this microphone, they would simply say, let's have more of the same freedom, please.
And I can hear from eve to morn the news from H.D. Kaltenborn.
Good evening, everybody. Watch the news from the Far East. A new fascist government in Tokyo adopts Nazi tactics against Britain, against the United States. London, and Washington take countermeasures. Britain arrests prominent Japanese. We embargo aviation gasoline. Tokyo protests. What next? Good night.
My heart soars on wings when Lucille Manners sings.
Hi there, ladies and gentlemen, in all those garden spots of America. This is your old friend and constant admirer, Ray Perkins, and this is Clarence, my piano. Clarence, quit sniggling, will you? Hi there, hold there, and how do you do? Just dropped in to say hey, hey, and swap a yarn or two. Soft white hands that were made just for tender caressing. Pale hands are smooth.
Whether it's Andante, Waltz, or Ricardo, the maestro for me is Guy Lombardo. Wouldn't be quite the same without Graham McNamee's well-known name.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen of the radio audience. It's a tremendous pleasure to be out here and listen to this program, this gorgeous World's Fair in New York. And I know that from coast to coast, we must have a good many million listeners. One of the greatest programs we've ever put on in the last 20 years, unquestionably. And I know one thing. It's always a pleasure for me to be in front of a microphone. I think if one of the things could cook, I probably would have married one. Not sure, but I think so. So, hello, New York, and hello, San Francisco, and Hollywood, and North Cherokee. Good afternoon, all, and good evening, all.
As for me, I'll never forget first hearing Jessica Dragonette.
Belong to me, I belong to you. As a radio pioneer with the unique privilege of seeing firsthand the unfoldment of American broadcasting, I salute and congratulate all whose imagination and industrious effort have made this great public service possible. My deep thanks to you, and my best wishes to all my dear radio friends.
And now to quiz the quizzer, the opportunity I seize, and ask of Clifton Fadiman some information, please.
Gosh, ladies and gentlemen, I'm lost without my quartet. All I know is what I hear Tuesday evening, and I'm not even sure of that till John Kieran says it so. But one thing I am sure of, radio is here to stay. And more than that, it's going places. I'll take a bet on it, whatever you like, against $10 and an encyclopedia. Okay, I'll throw in a cash register, too.
To Tommy Riggs, I tune my left, and Betty Lou is other half.
Well, goodness gracious, Mr. Tommy, I wish you'd explain it all to me again.
Well, all right, Betty Lou. This program is on the air tonight to show how proud we are in America of our right to free speech.
Free speech? Well, gee whiz, are they giving it away?
No, honey.
Well, Gardner, did they used to charge for it?
Yeah. No, no.
Oh, it's just free, huh?
That's right, Betty Lou.
Well, all I can say is I wish they'd do the same thing for double scoop ice cream soda for there, too.
When Kate Smith sings into the blue, I hear America singing, too.
Hello, everybody. This is Kate Smith speaking to you from what I think is the smallest broadcasting studio in the world, way up here in the mountains at Lake Placid. I'm very happy to take part in this program and say, as I have sung so many, many times, from the mountains to the prairies, to the oceans white with foam, God bless America, my home, sweet home. Thanks for listening, and good night.
When I hear music, the right man is the old jazz king, Paul Whiteman.
Tonight, as you sit listening to this program, and let your mind travel across the gray Atlantic, where the moon and stars are blacked out. Think of those there for whom each day is an order on a sheet of paper. Think of those who hear only what they're told to hear, who listen only to that which Mr. Big tells them to listen to. Land alone, may people still speak unafraid and safely. On the air, America, what you hear all around the numbers on your dial is said without fear.
In the city streets, in the little towns, in the farmhouses, over our country, no eyes watching, no police at the door to trace a whisper, no mutt or else.
And I, radio, do not come to you printed by a rubber stamp. There is no censor to blue pencil my speeches, O listeners.
No word shackled and put away that you may not hear it. No thou shalt not. No hand across the mouth. No truth embalmed and buried in silence. The metaphor strives unimpeded. The comedian's joke is not examined for traces of freedom.
There may be a few among you who turn from reason's light toward the European night. For these few, I say,
It's a good thing that America should argue.
Good that their opinions should be varied as the colors of their eyes and hair. Better those whittling philosophers sitting on a cracker box than a crackpot standing on a box of hate.
The soul of man withers slowly away when liberty is only a demagogue's cliché. When the bird truth along the speaking air no longer freely flies, there's an end of the generous, the great, and the wise. There the world stops short, and liberty dies. The honest expression of differences of opinion, each side speaking, and each heard, that is where radio stands. Remember that you're free. It's so easy not to remember.
1, 2, 3, 4, more times to every question. People have died in our history defending that liberty. We must not give it up.
One nation, indivisible, with liberty strong, and justice sure.
Faith like a river that flows through the land.
May take.
Drink of this river. Understand the tradition within, the strength within.
Yankee
against
Doodle,
the darkness, light will win.
We have a rendezvous with destiny. I hear America singing.
Do you hear us, America?
Do you hear?
Almighty God, against the tyrant's wrong, stretch thine arm over our continent. Let freedom be the air we breathe, the air we speak along.
The American way of broadcasting.
Of which station WOR is proud to be a part.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is John S. Young, continuing this program of tribute to broadcasting as we know it in America. We have contemplated American radio in all its rich contrasts. But yet there is on your mind perhaps one question. What does it all mean to me, my family, my children, my friends? What connection is there between freedom of radio and freedom of religion? That question we have anticipated. Grouped at our microphone, we have distinguished spokesmen of all faiths. Dr. Walter W. Van Kirk, Executive Secretary of the Federal Council of Churches of Christ in America.
In these trying days, it is good to take part in this ceremony, for we Americans should thank the Heavenly Father tonight for the privilege of being Americans. The first of these reasons is our unquestioned right to worship God as our hearts and our conscience direct. The second reason is that we do this in reverence, while a neighbor of ours worships no less sincerely in a different way. This inalienable right of religious freedom was recognized from the very start by our forefathers who wrote that precious and dynamic outline for man's conduct with each other, the Bill of Rights. This new instrument that projects the human voice around the earth at a faster clip than the speed of light has the opportunity to carry out the wise will of our tolerant forefathers, or through its immediate coverage of Catholic, Jewish, and Protestant homes, The radio may destroy the work of our forebears and divide this nation into camps of hatred and intolerance. American radio, reflecting as it does our aspirations and our hopes, has been used to draw us closer together and not to separate us. In truly American style, it has chosen the American way of doing good, and 43 million American Protestants applaud you.
Radio in this country also reaches our 20 million Catholic neighbors and friends. Reverend Brian J. McIntaggart, representing Archbishop Spelman of New York, has come to the Court of Peace at the New York World's Fair to bear testimony to the significance of this important occasion.
Radio is doing a vast missionary work. Radio today carries the torch of enlightenment first kindled on this continent by the epochal missionary searchings of Jogues, Marquette, and other early spiritual heroes. In an important sense, religious pioneering such as theirs set the spiritual foundations of democracy in the American tradition. But along with other people, we Americans in the last half century have inclined to forget those divine spiritual values which made our young democracy the hope and pattern of oppressed people everywhere. Bumper crops do not grow on eroded soil. Neither will spiritual values flourish in souls devoid of religion. As a nation, we have been living on spiritual capital borrowed from past generations. The warnings of religious, cultural, and spiritual leaders all too frequently have been voices crying in the wilderness. It is imperative that we now develop spiritual resources within ourselves. Democracy in the American tradition rests on the divine philosophy of the dignity of man. Radio, carrying this message of the dignity of man into the worldly welter of selfish ambition, has warned that democracy without God cannot endure. Thus has radio given to religion a new medium for reaching into the souls of men. And in turn, religion has given to radio the blessed privilege of carrying the truth and the love of God.
Participating in this program, emanating from both New York and San Francisco, sponsored by the two great world fairs, is still another churchman representing a great body of real Americans, Rabbi Jonah B. Wise of New York.
I have been impressed by the remarks of my distinguished colleague, Dr. Van Kirk, and Father McIntaggart. In the parallel plea for tolerance of both Catholicism and Protestantism, certainly we are impressed by the code of the National Association of Broadcasters making the point that radio reaches men of all creeds simultaneously. I cannot think of any other device which reaches so many people, yet contrives to serve all groups without stirring up animosity. It is a distinct achievement for all concerned in the broadcast of religious programs that the effect has been spiritually and socially unifying with few exceptions. It is good to know that in the United States, the Jew, the Catholic, and the Protestant can listen to the same broadcast without his children being inspired to run into the streets to stone one another. It is good to know that in America, this great medium for the transmission of culture and religious aspiration is still free to reflect both the diversity as well as unity of our beliefs and our common ideals.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, the chairman of the Radio Council for Children's Programs, Mrs. Harold Vincent Milligan.
129 years ago, Thomas Jefferson said, "Ignorance and bigotry, like other insanities, are incapable of self-government. We Americans of 1940, face to face with a human crisis as serious as that which Jefferson knew, may well congratulate ourselves that our freedom and the freedom of our children have been so ably safeguarded by the intelligent and far-seeing code of the National Association of Broadcasters. We have seen how, in order to entrench despotism and brute force, the regimented radio of other nations has systematically perverted the minds of their children, beclouding them with ignorance and indoctrinating them with hatred and godlessness. In this day of preparedness against the rule of force and aggression, one of the greatest weapons of American defense is our free and unprejudiced medium of radio. Radio is serving, not enslaving, the American people. And the code of the National Association of Broadcasters, as an expression of popular democratic will, has become as vital to free discussion in America as the Bill of Rights is to all American liberty."
Now, the president of the General Federation of Women's Clubs, Mrs. Sadie Orr Dunbar.
"I feel that I am speaking fairly for the woman citizen and the homemakers of the Americas when I pay tribute to radio and express our desire for its continued freedom in bringing to our homes a great educational force capable of enriching the lives of the individual members of our family. We acknowledge our debt to radio for uncensored, immediate, and timely news, for radio's contribution to the cultural life of our families, particularly in the realm of music, which is no doubt a stabilizing influence upon the taut and tired nerves of those who must courageously face unknown world conditions. For the generous and unselfish cooperation which radio has given to women's organizations in providing a new channel for the dissemination of information regarding the part women citizens play in community life, and for the willingness of radio to place in its code of ethics the recognition of the need for higher standards in children's programs. For these services, and on behalf of millions of women, we thank you."
In San Francisco this evening, there is standing at a nearby microphone a gentleman well qualified by position and accomplishment to report to you how American radio serves the public interest, convenience, and necessity. We take great pleasure now in presenting Mr. James Lawrence Fly, chairman of the Federal Communications Commission, who in any other land and in any other personage might have different things to say to you than he perhaps now has to say. From San Francisco, Mr. Fly.
"From Treasure Island, I am happy to participate in this tribute of the two great world fairs to the radio industry, both in an official capacity as chairman of the Federal Communications Commission and as just another listener who has found many enjoyable hours by the side of his radio. First, let me say a word about the government's interest in this field. The Federal Communications Commission was created by Congress to protect the public interest in radio and related fields of communication. It was set up to carry into effect the policies which you, the American people, want. The members of the commission are your representatives. No less are the broadcasters your servants. As trustees of the radio frequencies, which are public domain, the broadcasters are eager to learn what the public desires. They spend large sums of money in making surveys to learn the types of programs which meet with your approval. They are always sensitive to public reactions once they are made known. Those in the broadcasting industry know, for example, that so far as public issues are concerned, you want an opportunity to learn all the facts. They realize that other sources are open to those who want or who may be willing to tolerate the partisan presentation of information with its unbalance and the insinuation of prejudice into factual reporting. They are aware of their great opportunity to establish radio as the completely reliable, impartial medium. Idealism is a practical influence in the conduct of radio broadcasting. That, in large measure, is because you have made it clear that you do not want the magic of radio bent under the yoke of selfish interest. That you do want this public facility left completely free to serve the interests of the public. It is entirely appropriate that you make your wishes known to the broadcasters, and for that matter, to the commission. All of us want radio to continue its great strides for the benefit of the whole race. Its great force we all want exercised in this country to maintain American radio in the future as in the past, the finest and freest on the face of the globe. In the last analysis, the best radio, the freest radio, is that most responsive to the wishes of the people. That, we must remember, is democracy in flower.
Across 3,000 miles of the country, America Radio takes you to Washington, D.C., to bring a viewpoint vital to the nation, that of union labor. This evening, we have speaking for labor, Mr. William Green, president of the American Federation of Labor. Mr. Green.
Free speech has been implemented by radio into one of the most powerful weapons at America's command for the preservation of democracy. Through the medium of the radio, the American people have learned of the treachery that underlies communism, Nazism, and fascism. They know now beyond question that these systems enslave those who come under their power. Organized labor stands or falls by democracy. Like any other free movement, it cannot exist under dictatorship. The millions of working men and women who have gained economic and social security through organization into trade unions therefore owe a great debt to the radio for strengthening America's determination to resist at any cost the enemies of democracy.
As a labor leader, as an American citizen, Mr. Green has touched upon something taken for granted in the United States, but which has been held under by the dictators abroad. The right to speak as you think and feel. For more than 20 years, there has been an organization as actively concerned with free speech as any you may have in your hometown, the American Civil Liberties Union. Surely Roger Baldwin, as director, has something intimate and personal for us all. The director of the American Civil Liberties Union.
Good evening. This is not Roger Baldwin speaking. This is Quincy Howe, one of the directors of the Civil Liberties Union. A year has now passed since the National Association of Broadcasters adopted their self-regulating code. And I am delighted to testify in behalf of the American Civil Liberties Union that the code has encouraged free speech on the air. Free speech does not, in the words of Justice Oliver Wendell Holmes, mean the right to shout fire in a crowded theater. Neither does free speech mean the right to express majority opinions only. Again, according to Justice Holmes, the right of free speech means the right of the other fellow to express even the opinion that we may hate. Thanks to the code of the National Association of Broadcasters, nobody can buy time on the air to express only one side of a controversial issue. This prevents the interests with the most money from making us listen to their opinions only by buying up all available time. And of course, freedom of the air does not give anyone the right to utter slanderous, libelous, or obscene statements. Such statements violate the law, and free speech does not mean disrespect for the law. On the contrary, I can think of no greater disaster that could befall Americans than to lose their right to speak freely on the radio and everywhere else. May the National Association of Broadcasters continue to uphold that right.
Much is said these days about the rights of speakers to speak and of teachers to teach. Here's a man who pleads for the right of the listener, as he puts it, the right of the listener to learn. Dr. John W. Studebaker, United States Commissioner of Education, is a recognized leader in educational broadcasting and recently has been given a big new job. training hundreds of thousands of workers for national defense. Dr. Studebaker.
National defense calls for two kinds of preparation. First, we must have a powerful industrial and military machine and people trained to use it. Second, we must understand as a people what we plan to defend and believe in that object of defense with all our minds and hearts. In a word, we are planning to defend our way of life, the democratic heritage. I look to the radio as a primary means of building our moral and spiritual defenses. This great instrument of communication has already demonstrated its power to enlighten minds as well as to stimulate emotions. Let us thank God that in this country, radio has opened its channels to ideas and reports from every part of the world. Now, American radio and American education must lock arms in a national defense campaign to utilize this powerful medium to a greater extent than ever before to increase the civic literacy of the nation. We must explore new ways of making the democratic ideals, our freedom, vital and meaningful. We believe that if men know and understand, they will act wisely, that they can be trusted with the fruit of knowledge. Our job right now is to train the minds for the defense of this heritage of freedom. This is an educational job. It must be done in the schools, on the radio, in the motion picture houses, in the churches and clubs, and through the press. In a word, the time is ripe for a vast, systematic organization of youth and adult education related particularly to the conception of life and liberty we propose to defend. I know that radio will do its share.
Freedom of American radio also means freedom of opportunity, especially in the creative arts such as music. Here for years, the door of opportunity has been closed to the new and unknown composers. However, this year, the broadcasters of the United States have organized a music institution so that all composers hereafter may have equal opportunity to be heard. Among the hundreds of compositions recently published is a song entitled High on a Windy Hill. Jimmy Dorsey has this to say about the new song. There is a new note of freshness in this song, characteristic, I believe, of the new music which is yet to be written and enjoyed in America. From the Federal Plaza, Jack Joy and his Treasure Island Orchestra with Jimmy Brierley as vocalist will now preview this song written by Joan Whitney and Alex Kramer, High on a Windy Hill.
High on a windy hill. Thank you.
that falls my name.
Gentlemen, we are happy to present now Mr. Harvey D. Gibson, the chairman of the board of the World's Fair of 1940 in New York. Mr. Gibson.
The World's Fair in New York is more than happy to join with the Golden Gate International Exposition and the celebration of Broadcasting Day as a tribute to the American system of broadcasting, a system which has become a great and vital force in the development of our national aims and ideals. We of the New York World Fair realize to the fullest the power and the duty of radio to spread the message of democracy and American achievement. We planned our great exposition as a dramatic expression of the ideals and triumphs of American men and women in every field of human endeavor. Radio, I believe, can serve best by spreading to the four corners of our nation the doctrines of the democratic way of life, which makes possible the achievements which are on display at the fairs. Radio is indeed to be congratulated for its efforts along these lines, for its work in promoting national unity through the free expression of ideas in its own public forum. Here in the Court of Peace at the New York Fair, it is already evening, but on the opposite side of this great nation of ours, it is still mid-afternoon. There in the bright California sunshine, thousands of spectators have gathered to witness the Golden Gate International Exposition's contribution to this program. And heading that group is the president of the exposition, my friend, Mr. W.W. Monahan. Mr. Monahan, what does the West Coast have to say about Broadcasting Day?
From the President of the United States, read by one of his official family who has flown here from Washington especially for this occasion, the Secretary to the President, Mr. Stephen Early.
It is singularly fortunate that, at a time when the freedom of mankind is at stake through much of this world, we can assemble here to participate in a ceremony which symbolizes liberty in America. These words, freedom and liberty, are so much discussed in these days that I sometimes wonder if we maintain a constant appreciation of their real significance. Long have we enjoyed these blessings, there is temptation for the words to become abstractions. Yet today, there are millions of men who, perhaps, can hear these words over shortwave transmitters men who are suffering the tyranny and slavery that follow the loss of their freedom. Expression of opinion in parts of this world of ours is a felony, punishable by death. It is likewise a crime, according to the credo of the tyrant, for men who listen to the opinions of others, if such opinions differ with those of their dictators. Yes, there are men who are fighting and dying to maintain that freedom for themselves, and perhaps for us all. And this freedom cannot be maintained without sacrifice. The old truism, eternal vigilance is the price of liberty, has no boundaries in the world today. When free men become slaves in any part of the globe, vigilance requires that we prepare to make certain that any encroachment on liberty cannot happen here. This nation is now engaged in such preparation. Industry, labor, agriculture, and other groups are being mobilized into this great effort to make America invulnerable against whatever the future may hold as a threat to our freedom. This is being done by democratic procedures and with a real sense of national unity. Broadcasters, in common with many other groups in America, no doubt are concerned with the contribution they can make to the program of national defense. I can only give you a personal opinion. Broadcasters, it would seem, have a unique responsibility and a privileged opportunity. The dependence of our people calls for the highest degree of care in presenting facts impartially and without distortion. In the event of an even more extreme emergency, it seems to me, radio can and should continue to make its important contribution to the maintenance of the morale of our people. I see no occasion for any sort of extraordinary measures so far as radio is concerned. I am convinced that broadcasting will continue to function in accordance with the public interest and in a democratic way during any emergency. Your duty as American citizens is the best standard of conduct in the times of crisis, as well as under more normal circumstances. To the broadcasters and to the listeners to this program, I bring greetings and best wishes from the President. Your broadcasters know the President's views on the relationship of radio to government. Recently, he pointed out that while the government, long ago, had to set up essential controls for radio operations to prevent complete confusion on the air, in all other respects, radio is as free as the press. I bring you a new expression of hope that this freedom will endure forever. Likewise, I offer congratulations to the radio industry for its great record of progress and service. The American system of free radio, as symbolized by these plaques, is actually a living symbol of the freedom of us all. I thank you very much.
We present now Mr. Neville Miller, President of the National Association of Broadcasters, who will accept these plaques in behalf of the broadcasting industry.
A free people needs not only the right to hear, but also the right to be heard. This is what American radio means to the people of the United States. In this spirit, the broadcasters of the nation accept these plaques dedicated to freedom of the American air. With your help, we shall ever keep it so.
Ladies and gentlemen, our national anthem.
Hello.
the Mutual Broadcasting System.